This is the podcast for JNS Spine. Welcome to the January 18, 2013 podcast from Journal of Neurosurgery Spine. My name is Natalie Pynchon, and I will be reading synopses of some of the articles published today. Topics covered in this week's podcast are scoliosis deformity, hematopoiesis, and cervical fusion. Percutaneous posterior cervical fusion with a D-Trax facet system for single-level radiculopathy results in 60 patients. A clinical article by Bruce McCormack and colleagues. The most common operation for cervical spondylotic radiculopathy is anterior cervical decompression and fusion. All offending spur and disc is removed for complete root decompression. Fusion provides definitive stabilization of the motion segment. The authors concede good results, but question whether this is more surgery than necessary. The authors performed a prospective single-arm study of 60 patients with single-level spondylotic radiculopathy treated with D-Trax, an expandable bilateral titanium screw and washer implant that is placed percutaneously into the cervical facet at the symptomatic level. At one-year follow-up, there was sustained relief of radiculopathy according to the Neck Disability Index, the Short Form 12 Health Survey, and the Visual Analog Scale for neck and arm pain. Expansion of the neural foramina was identified on CT scans obtained at 6 months, but was less definitive at 1 year. 93% of patients had intrafacet bridging trabecular bone. Loss of lordosis at the treated level was an acceptable 1.6 degrees, and there was no change in overall cervical lordosis. There were no vertebral artery injuries, neurological complications, reoperations, or decrease in foraminal size at adjacent levels. Ectopic extramedullary hematopoiesis, evaluation and treatment of a rare and benign paraspinal epidural tumor. A case report by Tobias Matei and co-authors. Ectopic extramedullary hematopoiesis, or EMH, is defined as the formation of blood cells outside the bone marrow. It usually occurs in a scenario involving chronic anemia, when, even after the conversion of yellow marrow to red marrow, the body is still unable to meet the demand for erythrocytes. Although EMH most commonly occurs in the liver and spleen, it may actually occur almost anywhere in the body. Previous reports have described EMH presenting as paraspinal lesions in association with known predisposing hematological diseases, such as hemolytic anemia, myelofibrosis, or myelodysplastic syndromes, thalassemia, polycythemia vera, leukemia, or lymphoma. This report describes the first instance in the neurosurgical literature of EMH presenting as an epidural lesion in the absence of pre-existing hematological disorder. Since this case occurred during pregnancy, the authors hypothesized that the tumoral proliferation might be related to the natural maternal immune-privileged environment typical of the mid-trimester of pregnancy. Recognition of EMH as a possible differential diagnosis of epidural tumoral lesions is important, since chemotherapy and radiotherapy are effective therapeutic options in the majority of patients, and inadvertent attempts at resection of these highly vascularized tumors may lead to catastrophic intraoperative hemorrhage with no proven additional benefit. A multicenter analysis of factors associated with change in height after adolescent idiopathic scoliosis deformity surgery in 447 patients. A clinical article by Stephen Wei-Hung Huang and co-workers. Patients undergoing surgery for adolescent idiopathic scoliosis are often informed preoperatively that they will gain height as a result of their surgery. However, current estimations of height gain conflict significantly and do not have any clinical correlation. Based on data from 447 cases from a multicenter database, the authors developed a formula for predicting postoperative height gain after deformity correction in patients with adolescent idiopathic scoliosis. Factors correlating with postoperative changes in height included thoracic curve magnitude, number of levels fused, change in total sagittal curvature, and the presence of osteotomies. The contribution from the thoracic curve magnitude was significantly greater than the contribution of any of the other parameters identified. The results of this study suggest that changes in the coronal plane contribute more significantly to height changes than changes in the sagittal plane, and that approximately 0.39 centimeters of height gain can be expected for each 10 degrees of preoperative coronal curve. The authors note that unfortunately, a significant fraction of the postoperative height changes cannot be predicted by currently measured parameters, and further investigation is required. Thank you for listening. The Journal of Neurosurgery mobile app is now available. You can find it in iTunes and the Google Play Store. Just search for JNSPG to download the app for your mobile device today. JNSPG podcast content is now contained in the American Association of Neurological Surgeons iTunes U site. Sign up in iTunes for our podcasts and additional content, including video content and podcasts from the AANS, all updated continuously.